following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News. Here are your hosts, Olivia Reiner and Tom Silverstein. Welcome, everyone, to our Packers News JS Online Green 19 podcast alongside Tom Silverstein. I am Olivia Reiner. We've got a very special treat for everyone today. Later in our show, we will be joined by Green Bay Press Gazette sports columnist Pete Doherty to discuss the Hall of Fame voting process. Safety Leroy Butler is a finalist for a second straight year, and Pete Doherty will be presenting his case to the Hall of Fame voters in not so long from now. He would not give us the specific date of when it's going to be. Very secretive, but he takes
secrecy.
Yes, he walks us through that process, what it's like presenting, the research that goes into it all the time. Really interesting, some things I didn't know despite having talked to him about it before. So it was really cool. I think you'll all enjoy it. But before we get into that, it's the bye week. The Packers are kicking up their feet. Just kidding. No, they're not. Practice Thursday and Friday, meetings on Wednesday. Pretty normal week in some ways for the Packers, even though they don't play a game this weekend. So Tom, what exactly is happening this week?
Well, so smartly, in my opinion, Matt LaFleur is trying to give the players as much time off or refresh their bodies. So they've been off Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in terms of practice. They're going to practice Thursday and Friday. Then they'll have the weekend off. I don't know about next week, but more than that, he gave the coaches off on Tuesday and he's given the coaches off on Saturday. And I think he just wants everybody to kind of have a fresh mental freshness. And I do think the bye week really helps a lot of teams because that opportunity to rest your body is really crucial. You think about the wildcard teams, they just go right back at it like it's a normal week. And these other guys get a chance to get all their massages and hot tubs and whatever it takes without having to work out any other additional soreness.
Yeah, it helps that the Packers came out of this past week's game against the Chicago Bears relatively without major injury. There were a few minor injuries. I everyone's getting dinged up at this point in the season, but not a lot of players left the game and no one left for a long period of time. I know after the game on Monday, we were talking about tackle Rick Wagner, who has been dealing with knee injuries since I believe week 8 against the Minnesota Vikings. And he also left the next week's game against the San Francisco 49ers with another knee injury. And he has been on the injury report ever since with like flip-flopping knee injuries. I think he's hurt both of his knees at some point during the season. He took another blow against the Chicago Bears, this time to his left knee. And it was early in the game and it was like, it looked like it could have been a lot worse. He got rolled up on the back of his left knee. And he managed to stay in and fight through it. And that Monday, head coach Matt LaFleur was like, he took a vicious hit and he's really stuck it out for us. I mean, their tackle depth right now, as we know, with David Bakhtiari on injured reserve, has taken a hit. And it wasn't very deep to begin with. So they need Rick Wagner to be healthy. He's lucky to have this week to get healthy.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, there's guys who've been on the injury list week after week or at some point in the season where you know that, or even if they're off the injury list, they're still dealing with remnants of those injuries. You think about Za'Darius Smith, he's had that ankle injury all season and now he gets to stay off it or be not do much. He gets to treat it every day. Mercedes Lewis with his knee. There's just Alan Lazard. I mean, when has he had a chance to really just get back and treat his that core muscle injury? So I think everybody benefits from it. And the only thing that you wonder with a bye team is, you know, is there a little bit of rust when they come back? That's about it. But otherwise, come the fourth quarter, they should be in better shape than the opposition.
Yeah, we'll find out next week exactly how it impacts them. And we know last season, different year, different players for the most part, but last season they also had a first round bye and came out pretty strong against the Seahawks in the divisional round. So if there's any precedent there, you know, Matt LaFleur has been through this once before with this team. So maybe by this point, second year, have it down to a little bit more of a science coming back from a bye week in the postseason. So yeah, good stuff. Looking ahead to this weekend, the Packers get to be spectators. Perhaps they can watch the game a bit more like a fan would, or all of these games. It's super wild card weekend, six games, nonstop football for 2 days. I'm going to be glued to my couch all weekend, Tom. Are you going to catch all the games, one or two of the games? What's your plan?
I'm going to negotiate that. I have, I don't have free reign of my time. So because it's so rare that we get a day off, I do have to spend a little R&R time. So we'll negotiate that, but I believe I will watch all the NFC games. That will okay. be my goal, to make sure I see all of those.
So the NFC games are Saints, Bears, Seahawks, Rams, Washington, Buccaneers. Still wild to me that the Washington football team is the higher seed compared to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are the 5 seed, Washington being the 4 seed. If you're the Packers, which games are you keeping a close eye on this weekend?
You know, easily on paper, you would say, well, they need to play the Bears again. You know, you want the Bears to beat New Orleans, because then it's a slam dunk. They're playing the Bears again, who they've beaten twice. But it's always a risk playing a team a third time, because in the history of seasons, it's just really hard to win three against a team, even though the Packers are clearly a better team than Chicago. So yeah, maybe they would just assume have, take their chances and have Chicago. After that, I think the team they don't would least want to face out of the group that they will face is Tampa. I think they'd feel good about playing the Rams. I think they'd feel good about playing Washington. I think they'd feel good about playing New Orleans or Chicago. Those are the three teams that they might have. So Tampa would be the toughest out. There's no question Tampa beat them. Tom Brady's not going to be affected by any weather. Maybe some of the other people on the team, but I doubt it. So it would be, that would be a tough matchup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see exactly how it all shakes out. We'll be glued to our televisions, and then the morning after, we will check in with all of you and take a look at the opponent that the Packers are going to be facing in the divisional round. So should be a good old fun time. So I think without further ado, we will transition over to our interview with Pete Doherty. Hope you enjoy it, and we will talk to you guys soon. We are joined by Packers News, Green Bay Press Gazette sports media columnist, Pete Doherty. Pete, it is so nice to have you on a different format with us. It's nice to have a guest on the podcast. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's an honor. First time caller, long time listener.
We've been wanting to have you on here for a long time, Pete. Yes. It's my fault. I only like to hear my own voice.
I know it's tough to get access to me too, I realize. So
it's true. Yeah.
We've been calling your people for so long, and we finally got through. So we're very, very happy to have you today to talk about the voting process for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So you've been a member of the voting panel for 5 years, just about. I guess it's been closer. It's coming up on 6 years now. January 2015 was when you were named to the voting panel. How does one become involved in that process?
You know, I'm really not sure, other than, you know, the person before me had to leave the committee, Cliff Crystal, because he went to work for the team, and the rules at the time were, if you worked for the team, you can't be on the committee. And they asked a couple of people, I hope Spoon doesn't mind me saying this, but I'm pretty sure they asked him, and because he's got duties with the union taking up a lot of his time, he had to turn that down. And so they came to me and I said, yes.
You know, it's a good transition because I don't think people know how much work it is to do it. It takes a tremendous amount of time. You have to get to know the players that are being considered. And then in your case, you have to, anytime there's a player, a Packers player that is up for induction or possible induction or makes it to the final list, I should say, you have to present him in front of the group. And that is not an easy job, is it?
Yeah, so like for Butler, for instance, you know, my first couple of years, he wasn't getting any traction. And what people do on the committee is you can send out, you can send an email to the Hall of Fame, you know, the people who coordinate all this, and they'll send it out to all the voters. There's 48 voters. And so they'll send it to all them, and you can just do a, like a, hey, you know, when it's time to cut the list from, you know, 110 to 25, keep in mind Leroy Butler, here's a couple of reasons why. And so I sent one of those out. Lo and behold, that year, he makes the final 25. Now, he didn't make the final 15, but I did the same thing last year, and he did finally make the final 15 last year. And yeah, there's a fair amount of work to do with it. You got to call people in the league that you know and trust to get their feelings on whether they think guys are, you know, is this guy a Hall of Famer? Is that guy a Hall of Famer in your mind? You do some of that. And then, I spent this off, like last year with Leroy, I didn't really start working on his presentation. I didn't know if he was going to make the final 15 or not until he actually made it. So that gave me about a little over a month to work on it. And I got a hold of a lot of people. I knew what I was going to say anyway, but then this year, over the summer, I basically worked on it. So I haven't actually written the presentation, but I've got all the endorsements and quotes and everything. And I know pretty much what I'm going to say, but I still have to sit down and write the actual presentation.
So you actually go, it's typically in the Super Bowl. I don't know, are they doing it virtually this year?
Yeah, we're doing it Zoom. They've set a date. They've asked us not to share what the date is, but late in January, we're doing it via Zoom.
So there are 50, is that correct? 50 voters?
48. Yeah.
And how long do you get to present the player?
You get 5 minutes. So last year, you know, I sat down and I wrote out, you know, basically what I thought would be 5 minutes, and it ended up being 11. So I'm like, oh my God. And I left a lot of stuff out. And so I'm like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. So I had, you really have to cut it down. So I did. Now you can, as the discussion goes, you can put in some of the stuff that you cut out, but that 5 minutes goes really fast. I'm trying to remember, now this won't do a lot for listeners, but I think it ended up being, I think it was like 750, 800 words, which is, you know, if you write stories, that's a little shorter than your just typical kind of main story for a day. You know, those are usually around what, 900, 1,000 words?
Yeah.
Probably. Uh-huh. That's my columns are usually 900 to 1,000. So that is not a lot. But, you know, like I said, you can still get in information later as the discussion about the player goes on.
How long does it take you to put together that presentation in the weeks, months leading up to it?
It took a couple of weeks last year to get a hold of everybody. But it's funny though, when you call people about the Hall of Fame and you say that's what it's about, you get phone calls back and you get them back fast. It's pretty nice that way, because it's something people are really interested in. So it took a couple of weeks to do it last year. Like I said, I just kind of worked on a piecemeal in the off season this year. I got a hold of some highly, highly credible people who are in the Hall of Fame who I think they'll carry a lot of weight with the committee. One in particular and it's better if the person isn't associated with the Packers, because then it's somebody who doesn't have that bias. So I had a couple really good ones last year too, some Hall of Fame quarterbacks. But this year I'm added somebody to that list who I think is going to really, really his endorsement, I think, will carry a lot of weight with the committee.
How many endorsements do you like to have going into the presentation?
You know, I had, I probably talked to about 12 people last year, none associated with the Packers, who I thought would carry some weight. And I think I only, you know, I think I used 7 or 8 of them on the first draft. And then when it was only, you know, when I had to cut half of it out, I had to cut out, you know, at least half of those guys. I think I used 4 endorsements last year during the presentation.
So how many people will make it?
So there's two separate sort of categories here. There's the modern era players, which is what Leroy is part of, and Woodson. And those are guys who've been retired for 5 years, and you're eligible for 20 years after that 5 year waiting period. So that's the modern era guys. And that's the one where you start with, you know, 110 or so are nominated. You cut the list to 25 in November, you cut it to 15 in just late December. And then, you know, that's the guys that we talk about at the meeting. There used to be two committees, a seniors committee and a contributors committee. The seniors is for the guys who are past that 25 year mark. Contributors are general managers, people involved, you know, owners. You know, there's somebody involved in officiating who's kind of made the short list. And each year there's one of those makes it to consideration. And they added a coaches category this year because there's kind of a backlog of coaches. And I think they're going to have that coaches category. It's for like 3 or 5 years, they're going to have that. And then decide whether to continue with it moving forward. So this year, there'll be as many as 8 people will be able to get in. Those from the three committees, the seniors, contributors, and coaches, each of those guys, it's just an up or down vote. So you discuss their case, and then you vote up or down. If they get 80% of the votes, they're in. With the 15 players, you discuss each of their cases. That must take, that's probably about a 5-hour process, I would guess. Then they have you vote to cut the list from 15 to 10. So you vote for your top 10. The accounting firm there adds up all the ballots. The top 10 guys make it to the next round. They open the floor for another discussion, but they ask that it be just new information. Don't repeat anything that's been said. That doesn't take very long. Then you have a vote to cut the list from 10 to 5. And then when there's the final 5, then we vote up or down on each of those 5. So in the 5 years I've done it, the only person who's had an up or down vote who didn't make it was Tagliabue. So if you make the final 5, you know, your chances of getting in are extremely, extremely high.
Interesting. So in your mind, I mean, there's always slam dunks, and looking at the list, there's got to be, 3, maybe 4 slam dunks. That makes it tough, doesn't it?
I'm thinking, I'd like to know what you're thinking there. I'm thinking there's 2 for sure slam dunks. I mean, just absolute. And that's Woodson and Manning. Now,
Woodson, you said?
Yeah, Woodson and Manning, I think, because I looked it up. I think there's only 60-some, I think it was 64 or 65 players have made it in on their first ballot. So those two, I think, are slam dunk first ballot guys.
Yeah.
Kevin Johnson obviously is a Hall of Famer. He's going to get in.
Right.
I'm not 100% convinced that it'll happen this year. If I had to bet, I guess I would bet on it happening, but I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't make it this year. There's a lot of voters who like to, there's 2 things. They like to reserve the first ballot for the super extraordinary guys. And also, if you look at the list, like, you know, the 15, you know, let's say you think there's 8 Hall of Famers on there. Well, only 5 can get in.
Yeah.
So, you know, most people, I think most of the voters probably have anywhere from 7 to 11 or 12 that of people on that list they think are Hall of Famers. So not all the people that you support or who you think deserve to be in will get in. And so then, so, you know, sometimes a player who you know is a Hall of Famer, like, you know, this is what happened to Terrell Owens. There was sentiment against him for sure. It was, there was sentiment against him, but I think he knew he was going to get in. It's just he didn't make it in the first go round. That's all. So that could happen for different reasons for Calvin Johnson, just that his career was a little shorter. I've kind of talked informally with a couple of voters. You know, I get the feeling that it wouldn't be a shock if he didn't make it this year. I'm guessing he would, but it wouldn't be a shock if he didn't. So if he doesn't, then there's three spots. If he does, there's two. I'm trying to think of who you might think the other slam dunk was.
Well, I guess when I was thinking slam dunk, and you just changed my opinion because I didn't think of it that way, but I guess I was thinking of guys who are going to make it at some point. I kind of feel like Tony Baselli's going to make it, and at least I feel stronger about Alan Faneca, pretty dominant guard for really good teams. For I forgot how many Pro Bowls he made, but it was a lot.
So those are the exact kind of guys that I'm thinking of when I say, like, if Johnson doesn't make it this year, it could be in part because, like, those guys, Faneca's been a finalist. I think this is his sixth year. Baselli, this has got to be fourth or fifth year. So when it's borderline, like, let's say you think Johnson's borderline on whether to make it this year or not, and you like Faneca's chances, and you think Faneca deserves to be in, you think Baselli deserves to be in, you might vote ahead of those for those guys ahead of Calvin Johnson when it comes to picking your final five, just because you think, look, these guys have waited long enough, time to clear them out, we'll take care of Johnson next year.
Right.
So that's how that'll go. And the guys you bring up, I think Baselli has a really good chance this year. Faneca probably does. John Lynch is, this is his eighth year as a finalist, I think. And last year was the first year where I felt like there was a groundswell in the room for him. So I'm kind of thinking he's got a pretty good chance this year.
I have a big problem with John Lynch.
You're not the only one.
He is not a Hall of Fame player. I'm sorry. He was a one-trick pony, hard-hitting box safety. And I think people are giving him too much credit for being a general manager too.
Yeah, you know, and because the argument for him, and these guys argue so passionately, so he's in the Ring of Honor for two teams. He's in Denver's Ring of Honor. I didn't even realize that till the first time I heard his presentation. You know, I think being on TV right after he retired for all those years helped him out. How good the Buccaneers defense was. Now that was, a lot of that was Sapp and Brooks. You know, those are the two Hall of Famers already from that defense.
Yeah.
Success of that defense has really helped him out. So I think he's probably going to get in this year. I don't know that for a fact. It's funny because I've talked with four people from the Packers in the 90s, you know, who were very involved in the team, coaching, scouting, all that. And three of them were like, Lynch, no way. I mean, good player, really good player. But as you said, box safety, you know. And then one of them who, you know, there's no doubting this guy's ability, said, oh, yeah, definitely a Hall of Famer. So
interesting.
That's another thing. You know, it's just like when you talk to scouts about college prospects, you know, things like that. You know, how the opinions are just across the board. I've run into the same thing on this, too, where – one highly credible person will say, yeah, that guy's definitely a Hall of Famer. Another one who you really think highly of will say, nope, just not seeing it with that guy.
Yeah. Well, that's why there's so much debate in it.
Yeah.
And that's good. That is good.
How much research are you doing leading up to the meeting on other players, not on the player that you're presenting? And how much stock do you put in your own research versus the presentations you're hearing the day of the actual group presentation?
Yeah, that's a good question, because a lot of it is based on talking to the people you trust in the league who you've known for a long time and what they think. It's people you have a track record to, you really trust them. Now, when you hear the case, I mean, it can change your mind. I was really lukewarm on Kurt Warner. And I was kind of skeptical. I didn't think I would have voted for him. And after hearing the case made in the room for him and the discussion afterwards, I changed my mind right there and then, and I ended up voting for him. Right or wrong, I voted for him. So the room can have an effect on you. there's a player, I won't say who it is, and I won't say who the person was, but the discussion started on this guy, and I was thinking, yeah, I might vote for this guy. And then somebody in the room cited an extremely well-known coach who worked in that same division, who said, when we played this team, we didn't worry about this guy at all.
Wow.
And that just torpedoed him, at least in my mind, and I'm sure in a lot of other people's minds too, because the guy did not get in. Where
did that come from? Did it come from the presenter or?
No, the person who said, I talked to this guy and he said, we didn't care about him. It just came from somebody else on the committee. And it wasn't even the person representing that guy's market. It was just somebody who knew this guy pretty well and had a candid discussion with him. And that's what the guy told him.
Gotcha.
That's a lot of trust. There's a lot of trust in this process.
There is. There's a huge amount. And, you know, I mean, yeah, that's a really good point. And the reporter who said that was someone I trusted implicitly. So there's, you know, some people I don't know well enough where I might wonder, you know, but this was someone who I had no doubt was telling the truth.
Yeah. So what do you think Leroy's chances are? Can you even muster a guess at this point, or does the discussion, until you hear the discussion, is it hard to know?
It is hard. I can kind of muster a guess, but it's just things just take on a life of their own during the discussions sometimes. You know, like I said, for instance, with Lynch, last year was the first year where I was like, oh, wow. You know, because I kind of thought this guy's going to be a finalist a bunch of times and never get in. And last year was the first time I thought, oh, this guy's going to get in, because it was like things just flipped. And the discussion was wholly positive about him. A lot of people talking, saying, yeah, I think this guy deserves it. The discussion for Leroy last year was really short. I reached out to a lot of voters after the meeting and got their opinions. And I got a really good vibe that a lot of voters think he's deserving, and that they just, you know, there's some people that need to, that they want to clear out ahead of them, and they want, you know, maybe a few want to learn more about his case. But I think a lot of them think that his case is really strong. But there's this backlog, you know, for instance, Lynch, I'm guessing a lot of voters will vote for Lynch before Butler, because Lynch has been so many times now. You got Pacelli and Fanica, same thing, different positions, but same thing. The Calvin Johnson thing is interesting. I think Leroy's got a chance this year. Last year, you knew he really didn't have any chance to make to actually make the Hall. I think he's got a chance this year. I think next year, I've got to look back at the list. I think there might be only one slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famer next year, a new guy. So if not this year, I think his odds will go way up next year. Steve Atwater making it last year really, really helps Leroy's case, because I think Leroy's got a better case than him. Mm. And so him being in, and everybody on that committee having voted that guy in, I think it'll be tough for them to look at Leroy's case and say that Atwater has a better case. I mean, at the bare minimum, I think you got to say that his case is just as good. So I think, you know, I'm really bullish on Leroy getting in, whether it's this year, next year, you know, year after, whatever. Who knows with that. If Lynch makes it in, that really helps Leroy's case too.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So this year is a coin flip. I don't know. It'll help. I'm hoping the discussion will be much longer and more people will be involved in it, in the discussion this year. That'll tell something. But chance this year, a really good chance. I think I'm really bullish on his chances of eventually getting in.
My last question, Pete, is how many times do you go, can you go as a finalist before people, you'll just drop out and no longer be considered?
Well, by the rules, it's 20 years after your 5-year waiting period is up. So 25 years after you've quit playing is when, if you don't make it that last year, then you go, you become you go to the seniors pool, which is, you know, that's an abyss. It's really tough to make it through there because only one person a year gets through that committee. I don't know what the committee's tolerance is for how many times people will vote for a guy. I'd have to look it up. I think there have been guys who have been finalists like 10 or 11 years. I mean, how many years was Kramer a finalist? I think that was way up there.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's
it might've been 11 or 12 or, you know, but at a certain point, I think, you know, guys just stop making the finalist list. I don't know if there's been anybody who's been through that as long as I've been on the committee. You know, I've only been on 5 years. So I can't think of anybody who was like a finalist 9 times and then the 10th time didn't make it as a finalist. But obviously there is a limit somewhere in there because there have been guys who have been finalists, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 times and haven't gotten in.
Wow. Well, cool. This is really cool to peel back the layers of the process, Pete. Thank you so much for sharing today.
Yeah, it's funny. All these different Hall of Fames have different ways of doing it. Baseball's is totally different than football's, but it's really interesting to be part of the process. And yeah, it was fun talking about it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much again to Pete for coming on and chatting with us. It is lovely to add a third person into the mix. Learned a lot. Good banter, good vibes, good fun times with Pete, Tom. Anything else you want to add for the people before we sign off here?
No, just that the only other thing I would add is that we will try to be back here on Monday to give you, once we know who the opponent is, give you a little bit of a scouting report and our thoughts on it. And then, of course, later in the week, we'll be back to have an official preview of the game.
Yep, sounds good. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening today. Make sure you're subscribed to the JS Online Packers News Green 19 podcast, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Check out packersnews.com for all of your Packers coverage. Thank you once again for joining us. We will see you next time.